She'll tell you what to do, explaining all the things. No matter what tomorrow brings, let's answer all the questions. Let's Jamie's our host, she's bursting with style. When she needs a little boost, she'll call her co-host Miles. Explaining all the things, no matter what tomorrow brings, let's answer all the questions. Let's explaining all the things.
Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of Explaining All the Things. I am your host, as always, Jamie Wilson, joined by my co-host.
Hi, everyone. Miles Mancini.
And today we have a special guest.
Lindsay Rushworth. I'm the director of the Center for Academic Achievement here at FGCU.
Awesome. So you didn't have to come very far because your office is in the library, right?
We're over in Library West on the second floor, so suites 201 and 202.
Wow, that was impressive. We are obviously learning about successful students, what makes successful students, and we're having you here today because you run all of the resources that give students success here at FGCU. So can you just give us a rundown on those areas?
Yeah, so the CAA handles kind of all different programs and initiatives that are academic support program focused. So that includes for us peer academic coaching, the writing lab, supplemental instruction, and peer tutoring.
Great. Before you came, we were speaking with our audience who is here with us prior to the recording. And a lot of people had said that their stressors or their areas that they feel most nervous about right now is time management, organization, getting good grades, all those things. So what's kind of the process? So let's say I'm a student and I'm struggling with maybe, let's say, a class, a specific class I'm doing. What are the steps that a typical student has to take at FGCU to get help?
So the first thing you can do, I mean, there's kind of a lot of different resources, and I think for first year students especially, it can be a little bit overwhelming because you go through orientation and you learn about all these fantastic resources, but then when you have to use them, it's like, where do I start first? So the CAA offers resources that are free to all students. And of course, you should use your professors, you should go to their office hours, talk to them, like get a good understanding of the course and the expectations. But when you're ready for that kind of more hands-on supplemental support, the CAA is your place. I think with everything that you kind of do in your first year and really those transferable skills that you learn that carry you through college, all ties back to having an effective time management strategy and plan. So when you're initially, if you're struggling in courses, I'd walk it back to time management, start there. And then I think what you develop out of that when you start to learn how to manage your time effectively, all the other things will kind of fall into place, which I'm sure we'll talk more about today.
We were talking about this last week, but I think it applies to this, that some students sometimes when they are first brought here, is that maybe they kind of, you know, skated their way through high school. They just did the bare minimum. They got good enough grades to get into college. But now they're spending less time in class and more time on their own having to study. And there is a huge mind shift with that. And students tend to struggle with that. Do you see that a lot in the CAA?
I think it's one of the most common things we see. We tend to see we work with a lot of first year students in the CAA. And something that, like the conversations that we have tend to focus on that transition from high school to college. And I think just from talking with so many students and our peer coaches who are student leaders in the office, I think one of the main differences is that for some people in high school who can kind of get by with the just not really studying, not spending too much time on homework, it's because you're learning to remember short term. Right? In high school, your mindset tends to be, I'm learning so I can pass this test or so I can do well on whatever I'm trying to accomplish this semester. Where in college, all of your classes, the skills you learn, the coursework you engage in, it's scaffolded, right? It builds upon each course, each step of the way, each concept you learn, if you break it down to even a concept you're learning in intermediate algebra. Well, you're going to need that for college algebra. You're going to need to understand each concept in college algebra for whatever you go into after that. Sometimes concepts need to be transferable between courses you take. So we were thinking in terms of prerequisites and that kind of knowledge base that gets you into your upper levels. You're not learning short term anymore. You're learning to understand and retain information long term. And I think when you get yourself into that mindset and you open yourself up to kind of learning those strategies that are going to help you do that, that's, I think, one of those early indicators and factors of how you're going to be successful in college.
I think, too, the difference is for a student to initiate anything with CAA, they have to come to you, mm-hmm. right? Like, you're not seeking them out. Like, you can't see their grades. You're not looking inside the roster. You're not, like, spying on anything or their parents not calling, right? Like, mm-hmm. they have to initiate that. So I think that also boils down to their success. And this chapter that the students were reading, a lot of it talks about characteristics of successful people or characteristics of successful students. Mm-hmm. So would you kind of put that under the umbrella of a successful student has to have the initiative? What would you say a successful student needs?
I think it's initiative. It's kind of tying into that, like you have autonomy and agency in college. Like Jamie said, there's not really that authority figure, whether it's a teacher you had in high school or a parent or, you know, someone who's kind of watching and holding you accountable. You are the person holding yourself accountable now for the most part. So I think having that agency, that kind of autonomy, taking initiative on your own is going to play, I think, a crucial role in ultimately your success. I think there's parts along the way where, you know, you develop kind of accountability buddies, partner, you know, friends, you make connections with professors, but all of that takes time. That's usually not something you have initially.
Yeah. The big thing when I was in college, we went to study at the Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. No one does that anymore? No? Okay. Like,
where did you go?
We drove all the way down to the Barnes & Noble that's on Daniels and 41. I don't know why. That was a place to go, because when we were in school, there was the library, of course. But the library only had two floors back in the day, by the way.
There wasn't a lot of space.
Yeah, and so I remember, and I was talking about it to my kids. I'm like, we went to Barnes & Noble to study. And my kids were like, why? I'm like, I couldn't even tell you. I guess we drank coffee at the Barnes & Noble.
I remember going to the Taco Bell off of Daniels. See? That's like where, that was like my
study
spot.
I would not
spot.
Go to the Taco Bell. What? That is out, no.
Wasn't going to the Barnes &
Noble. We'll
talk
about study spots later. So John has a question for us kind of about this similar topic.
So on the slide, characteristics of successful, peaceful people, efficacy. Mm-hmm. The slide explains what an internal locus of control is. The belief you have the power to produce a positive effect on the outcome of your life. How do you gain this skill, and how much does it matter to not only being a good student, but being a good person?
I love that question so much. I think this is such an important class, and Jamie was telling me a little bit about it at the beginning, and kind of thinking about kindness and how you can do that in your lives, but in your jobs, your careers, like compassionate leadership. I think something that I think is really important to develop, and this is a fantastic class for it, it's a good starting point, is a growth mindset, that you're not approaching maybe challenges and obstacles that happen as a point that can lead you to failure, but points that even if you do fail, it's going to be fine, that you're going to learn from it. You're going to add tools to your toolkit so that when challenges and obstacles happen in the future, you build resiliency. You learn how to handle them effectively. It's less kind of jarring and shocking when those things happen again. So I think anytime you can approach something with that growth mindset, that you're not internalizing it as something that is wrong with you or something that happened to you, that's not happening to other people, that it's just a learning point. It's something that is helping you be successful in other areas of your life down the road, even if it's not right this second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that brings up a lot of when we talk about being compassionate to ourselves. And this crucial time right now, we're at the recording of this. We're in week 5, nearing to week 6. And we were talking with our live studio audience about how this is a time where students kind of fall out of the honeymoon phase of university life, right? Mm-hmm. Like the newness is kind of worn off and you're like, oh crap, I actually have to do this work. Like I have to learn these things and I have to get a good enough grade to then do these classes again in the semester. And I think what your point is really nice is that like all hope isn't lost. Like if you bomb a test, like, or if there's a way out, like you are not a failure. You are not, you know, it's not like you're not equipped to be here. It's a learning moment to say like, I am one of many people who are struggling. Who can I go to now to get the help?
Mm-hmm. I think just to kind of like share, I guess, like a personal anecdote, like I failed my first semester of college my freshman year. Like, and there were a lot of things that contributed to that. As a first generation college student, very supportive parents, but they never went through college, didn't know how to kind of help me navigate financial aid and all the resources available to me. I was just a little bit lost in things. And I think as, you know, terrible as that was to go through at the time and being put on academic probation and all of that, like, I did fine the second semester. I got connected to the right resources. I developed some resiliency, some agency. Mm-hmm. But I think experiencing that has really shaped my perspective on how the work that I do in the CAA now and the work that I want to do to help students. So it's hard to see that in the moment sometimes, but I promise you, like when those things happen, if you are open-minded and you've got kind of that growth mindset and you just pick yourself back up, do the best you can, like it's going to fall into place and it'll help you out later on.
So I know a lot of students struggle with writing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're seeing that it's the same as it normally is. I don't know if writing, from my perspective as a faculty member, I feel like there's a disconnect with writing sometimes, especially with the students that we are getting as freshmen and sophomore and those types of things. I know that you all have the Writing Center. Tell us, like, walk us through what that entails for students who feel like they need some writing support. And before you answer that question, my friend Juan is going to ask us a question about writing, because I do think that a lot of people struggle with writing. We tell them as faculty members, hey, go to the Writing Center, but they don't know what that entails. So Juan, ask us your question.
Okay, so in slide 11 of the reading titled Writing Papers and Reports, it is stated as an advice. Focus first on generating ideas. Writing scholars refer to this process as focus-free writing. You write freely for a certain time period just to come up with ideas, not to write complete, eloquent, and grammatically correct sentences. I would like to know if there are any specific techniques or strategies to generate ideas in the best way possible, and which are those strategies?
Thank you, Juan. Yes.
All right. I like the kind of framing of that is writing when you're first starting out, it's don't lead with that expectation of perfection, right? Writing is a process. It's a process every single time. And so when you're first starting out, I think something that can be really helpful is to do some kind of version of an idea board or a vision board. Some people call it storyboard, where you are just kind of throwing out, you're looking at all different sources, references, ideas. You might be talking to classmates. You can do a brainstorming session in the CAA, which I'll hopefully get to talk about. So just using all of the resources available to you to get something visual down, something that you can refer back to, that you can cross things out if you're like, nah, that's terrible, I'm not going to do that, that you can expand upon. I think when you, what can happen, I think sometimes, especially if you're new to the kind of level of writing that you do in college and starting out those Comp 1, Comp 2 classes, it's a different genre usually of writing than what you're used to from high school. So you're adapting in that way. But I think if your approach is like it's a learning experience and you're try to start with that kind of brainstorming, that vision every time, let it develop. Don't be afraid to kind of go back and start over. But I think a key part here is you have to give yourself enough time to let these ideas develop.
Yes, hallelujah.
If you're doing this the night before, like, that's not great. I'm not saying it's not possible. We've all been there, but it's not great. So give yourself enough time to let the process work and for you to use all the resources available to you.
Now, can they just drop into the Writing Center? What's the, yes. the schedule status like? Yep.
So Writing Center, I love it so much. I was an English major, so I've got a little bit of a soft spot for the Writing Lab. With the Writing Lab, so lots of different ways to engage with it. You can drop in. We are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. two nights a week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We are there till 9 p.m. So lots of hours and opportunities for you to engage. You can drop in person. We have online drop-ins. So you can go through our website to the online drop-in queue. One of our consultants, we have consultants who are on drop-in hours, and they'll connect with you virtually if you choose to do that. You can schedule appointments ahead of time. We've got some students who are in those tough writing-based courses, they just need the help. They want the consistent appointments. That's fine if that's you. So lots of different ways to engage with it. I think something super important to remember about the Writing Lab is that you can come in at any stage of the writing process. So if you just want to chat, brainstorm ideas, talk with someone, the Writing Lab uses what we call a hands-off approach, which all that means is that they're never going to do the work for you. They're not going to sit down with you and tell you their ideas. They're going to help you learn to develop skills to brainstorm yourself, to help you learn to generate your own ideas and concepts, and then take those ideas and kind of pull them all the way through to final draft of your paper. I know you're first-year students now, so you might be in those Comp 1 and Comp 2 classes, but the Writing Lab is really for any students from any major who are in a class with any writing-based assignment attached to it. So we actually see a lot of STEM students in the Writing Lab. They're coming in for help with their lab reports. We see business finance majors coming in. They've got a lot of writing-based assignments, engineers coming into the Writing Lab. So the focus is, it's not helping you really interpret the assignment. It's helping you develop kind of structure for engaging with different genres of writing, for developing your ideas. Depending on what you need help with, they're happy to help with the kind of syntax, grammar, formatting, citation. And you can actually, when you schedule an appointment or if you drop in, there'll be a little comment box and you can tell our writing consultants what you want to focus on. It's super helpful if you upload a copy of the assignment so that they can kind of understand the context that you're working with. But it's really like you lead, you get to tell us what you need help with, and we will go from there.
Awesome. So we talked about the Writing Center. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other one I'm really interested in, and I was never this type of student, so this is why the people who are like in STEM classes or math classes or science classes, those types of things, tell us about that, I want to call it the buddy system, but I know it's not the buddy system. They're learning with them.
Yes.
And then is it like a TA? Is that how the students can think of it like that? Or is it bigger than that?
So supplemental instruction, we do have a supplemental instruction program. Right now, our SI leaders are in anatomy and physiology 1 and 2 classes. In the spring semester, kind of exciting preview, we're going to be expanding that out into some other STEM classes. The idea with supplemental instruction is that these are student leaders, so they're sophomores through seniors, who have taken these general education classes, usually with the instructor that you're in class with. Mm. They attend class with you, so they're kind of in there, they're kind of watching, observing the teacher or the professor teach the course content. They're able to kind of engage with you, relationship build in the classroom. And then outside of that, they hold supplemental instruction sessions. So these sessions they're 50 minutes to an hour long, and the SI leaders really focus on helping you apply the concepts and the theories that you learn in these classes into different situations outside of it. So for example, with Anatomy and Physiology 1 right now, they're about to do some work with bones. Our SI leaders are super excited for this week. They've got skeletons they're going to be coming into their SI sessions with. They often come in with games, models, toolkits, activities. It's discussion-based, so you're in your SI sessions with other students in the same class as you. So you kind of get to relationship build, you form study groups, you have a great connection to a student leader on campus. Awesome. So lots of opportunities there.
Love that. Yeah. And what a good experience for the SI leader.
Yeah,
for sure. A common theme I keep on hearing over and over, Lindsay, as you're explaining all these great opportunities that students have, is this, that, you know, education when you're here, especially as a college student, your first class is your first semester, that you're not alone. That, mm-hmm. you know, I think we look at our schooling experience as a very solitary experience, right? We mm-hmm. think of writing, we think of all of these things, studying as very solitary, but this is all very group based.
It is. And I think that's, I think one of my favorite parts about the CAA is we're tailoring the resources to be what you need them to be. So we often find that, especially first year students coming into the office, like the, I think you're right, like the approach usually, or the maybe preconceived notion mm-hmm. is that academics are a solitary mm-hmm. kind of experience and activity. And it's really not. It's kind of finding the right connections and being in spaces where students are in the same classes as you. They're struggling with the same things. Right. They're enjoying kind of that process of learning. It doesn't always have to be about the struggle. That can be maybe what leads you there sometimes. But I think we're seeing this shift that I do want to mention is with our resources, like if what leads you to the CAA is because you're struggling academically, like that's fine. No one's asking you what you're coming in for, right. what test you
did. What's your grade?
Yeah. They're just like, what do you need help with today? And we go from there.
Yeah.
That said, we do have a lot of students who will use these resources proactively. Mm-hmm. So just assume that it is only going to help you. It's not going to hurt you to use these resources. So kind of set yourself up to start using the resources. This is a life skill, right? Know yeah. what resources are available to you and learn how to use them. Yeah. It's going to help you be successful.
I just think of it like, I don't know how to be a plumber. And if I have a plumbing problem in my house, I'm going to call a plumber and mm-hmm. I'm going to watch what they're doing so I can maybe do it next time, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Like I cannot yeah. physically be an expert in all the things. So I need an expert to help me. Let's say I'm in a class and I'm just going to name like a random class, like medieval history. Is there a tutor waiting for me in medieval history, or do you have like subsections of people who feel comfortable tutoring in different genres?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So the way that our peer tutoring work. So all of our services are peer-based. These are students who have kind of mastered these different subjects, these skill sets. They've been trained on how to engage with students. So with peer tutoring, we use a drop-in study table model. So what that means is there's really wide course coverage. We're almost up to 40 different courses oh, wow. that we offer peer tutoring for. Our hours 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. for peer tutoring. You can look on our website, just click on tutoring right on the homepage. It gives you the list of drop-in hours. We have, this is going to sound super nerdy, but we're able to use some kind of like predictive data analytics from how we track our engagement with students to understand like what times students need help with intermediate algebra. So we can make sure we're offering like the right coverage at the right times when you're most likely going to need it. So you can drop in anytime. Peer tutoring, no appointments necessary. Just swing in. You can stay as long as you want. You can come back and forth as many times as you want in between classes, work, whatever you have going on. So it's a fantastic resource. If there's ever a class that you need support with, I don't think we cover medieval history.
I have no idea. I don't teach medieval history, but
I do have writing support for that. It's just somewhere else. Yeah.
But chances are you might find someone who's also in that class with
yes.
you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Time management, I think this also goes back to time management. Mm-hmm. And before we get to time management, Amora's going to ask us a question because hers has to do with SMART goals. And I think being mindful of the goals you have for yourself helps with that. So Amora, take it away.
In chapter 3, when discussing SMART goals, the component specific is defined by it states precisely what the goal is and what you will do to achieve it. How can we determine when it might be time to reassess and adjust certain steps in the goal plan? Sometimes, as we progress, external factors, new insights, or unforeseen challenges may arise, making the initial steps less effective. Identifying when it's necessary to update the plan ensures continued progress and goal alignment. How can we recognize the right time to make these adjustments to ensure the steps remain effective in reaching the goal?
Aren't they so smart?
That's another great question. I think whenever I'm working with students on SMART goals, actually whenever we do SMART goals mm-hmm. as staff, and whenever like I'm kind of thinking about SMART goals, working with students on them, I think one of the key things you have to keep in mind is that being adaptable, right? And I think this is another skill that is going to just help you navigate college, your careers, life in general, is, yes, things are going to happen. Sometimes they're often things out of your control. Life happens. And being able to adapt your goals, to change them, reevaluate them, you can do away with them and just make a new one.
Right.
Like, I think it's more important to have a goal than, like, it doesn't have to stay the same. It should not stay the same. So goals should evolve, and sometimes that kind of goal evolution is going to look like, and actually it's a new goal. You changed your major, and if you had one focused on marine science and now you're English, that was me, then your goals are going to look a little different. That's okay. I think something that's super helpful, especially when you're in college, is as you're working on your SMART goals, to kind of have points in the semester, so your first semester right now, check in on those SMART goals around October when you're getting ready to do your course registration. If you're thinking about making a major change, then you can be kind of reassessing what those goals are and what they look like. Sometimes it's not kind of doing away with a goal and creating a new one. Sometimes it's just changing it a little bit. Maybe you make a major change that's same kind of field, but different major. The goal doesn't have to change that much, right? These are kind of more academic focused, but I think the same applies to professional development goals or to social goals or career goals. So I think it's just being flexible and adaptable. It's kind of like, be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
You're allowed to change your mind. That's what college is for. So it's okay if you don't stick to the same thing throughout, or if your goals kind of evolve as you do, right? You're not changing. You're going to be a different person the end of these 4 years than you are right now. And your goals are going to be different too.
I love that. I think that's so smart. I think, talking about SMART goals, so smart. I think that one of the things I see students struggle with, and I think is that the fear of change, mm-hmm. right? So you have this vision of what your life is going to be or what you're going to study in college. And that's okay to change. And the other part of it is holding yourself accountable when things don't go well, mm-hmm. like figuring out like, okay, what could I have done differently? I think a lot of it for our students is like the time suck. There are so many things that like our students, myself included, fall into time sucks where things just, we lose all concept of time. Like the next thing you know, I've been on Instagram Reels looking at dogs for like 14 hours and where did the time go? So do you have any kind of tips before we end that?
Okay, so yes. I love this topic so much because I think like we all struggle with time management sometimes. Yeah. Like I do too. And sometimes I'm better at it and I can anticipate it. And sometimes like things just happen and I'm like, I gotta get it back under control. So I think a couple of things. Good resource if you're working with time management, developing a time management plan. We have peer academic coaches in the CAA. So these are student leaders, again, sophomores through seniors, different areas of expertise, different majors, backgrounds. They can help you look at your schedules, your academics, your course syllabi, your job schedules, other things that you might be committed to, whether it's family, having a social life. They will help you put together a kind of weekly time management plan, but they can also do a semester at a glance schedule. So you can kind of have an idea of what to anticipate when you have everything laid out for the entire semester. And a big part of this is making sure that you're maintaining that healthy balance between your academics, your social life, whatever other responsibilities you have. So making time to, eat lunch, eat dinner, go to the gym. If relaxing to you is like checking social media, like that's fine. It's when you kind of fall into it wastes like 5 hours of your day. That's not great. Now, to answer kind of Jamie's mm-hmm. question about some advice for things you can do for time management, so a couple of things. I actually brought some resources. I'll leave them with Jamie and Miles. So there's a technique that we use in the CAA. It's called the Eisenhower Matrix. I don't know if anyone's heard of that.
Very fancy.
It sounds very fancy, but it's very easy to learn.
Presidential and science fiction all wrapped into one.
It's our favorite. Yeah. So with the Eisenhower Matrix, it basically gives you a kind of four quadrant chart where you start to lay out things that are important, things that you can schedule ahead of time, things that you can delegate and things that you can eliminate, which that's my favorite category. Yeah, it's like, do I really need to do this? No, I don't. I'm worrying about it for no reason. So you can kind of work with the Eisenhower matrix, and the worksheet I brought for you has lots of examples. Mm-hmm. It's tailored to kind of college student population, so easy to work with. But that is just like a very foundational way to kind of visualize your responsibilities, what you need to kind of stay on top of. But I like that method a lot because it also helps you think through the things that maybe can wait till later that aren't super important. And that doesn't mean that they're not on kind of the forefront of our minds.
Right.
But it kind of helps you, it kind of grounds you a little bit to be like, all right, I can probably let this one go. This can wait till later. I've actually got to focus on these other things first. Or my favorite thing is I actually don't need to worry about mm-hmm. this. Like, this is not a thing for me in the next 5 months. So let's forget it. Another great technique. So this is going to kind of wrap in doing homework, working on assignments, but also effective study strategies. It's called the Pomodoro technique. And this is going to help you use a method we call interleaving. It's where you block off times for yourself to study and work on assignments. Now, those are different things, right? Working on an assignment for a class is not the same as counting that as study time. So it helps you kind of work through different assignments in about 25-minute chunks of time. Something that I think a lot of students fall into is thinking that you're going to like cram for a test, or you're going to have a 4-hour study session and that's what you have to do to be successful. Nah. That's going to help. It doesn't help you with your long-term memory retention. So scheduling yourself time to do work and to study in those 25-minute blocks of time, and then giving yourself a 10 to 15-minute break is going to increase long-term memory retention. It's going to help you work through your assignments and the things you need to get done faster and more efficiently. So I also have another resource about the Pomodoro technique, so I'll leave that as well.
Pomodoro technique. It's like I use on Sunday when I make sauce.
That's where it came from. Yeah. I'm gonna use that and give it to my husband. Okay. So we're gonna play a quick game with you before you leave. We're gonna play, it's called This or That. So you have to choose. Okay. You have to choose
the pressure.
Yes, you have to choose one, and then you could explain why you're choosing that. Okay. So it's not like you just have to yell it out and we move on. Okay. So we're gonna start easy. Favorite study spot for maybe students or yourself, I don't know. Just whatever strikes your fancy. Favorite study spot, the library or hammocks?
Ooh. I'm going to say the library. Although I think as a first-year student, I would have said hammocks.
Right.
I think the library because of the, I think the science behind it, right? If you are able to slightly change your study location during the duration of the time you're studying, it's going to help also increase that long-term memory retention. So I think if you're in a spot like the library where they've got like those super comfy chairs, but then they also have like tables you can study at with like the library.
Move around.
Yeah. So you're in the library, like you have kind of more options. You got more spaces to be. You can be comfortable. You can be in a kind of more structured environment. Mm-hmm. You can use peer tutoring and the CAA, which is also there. I'm not just picking it for that reason.
Makes sense.
With the library, if you haven't realized this yet, so the way I think like most college libraries work, first floor is more social and a little bit noisier. There's more going on. The higher up you go, the quieter it gets. So if you're looking for a kind of quiet place, third floor, fourth floor, if you need some kind of background noise going on, first floor, second floor.
I had no idea that thought process existed, but that's smart. Okay. Favorite music, and I crowdsourced this option before you came here because I am old. Here we go. Favorite music to listen to while you are studying either classical or lo-fi beats? Lo-fi. Do you know any of those?
You're so hip.
Yes,
I know lo-fi.
I think it's got to be probably, I don't know if it's classical. I don't know if you guys have like either streamed or there's like a YouTube streaming channel too where it does like classical version of pop songs.
I do listen to that.
Yeah,
on Alexa at home.
I can't have words because then my brain is thinking about the words and not what I should be focused on. Yes. That's just, I think it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
Depends on your.
I'm always amazed by people who can have the TV on in the background while they're studying. I can't do that, but you know, more power to you if that's you. So, most students that come in this or that, are they coming in for math or are they coming in for writing?
Ooh.
Where's your matrix now, Lindsay?
You've entered probably the depends
on the
matrix.
It probably depends on the time of, time of the semester. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think writing tends to have... Oh, we're actually seeing a little bit of a shift in this. So we're seeing students want more in-person options for services. Cool. So we've seen an increase in the in-person writing support. I think
that
with
makes sense.
Math, yeah, we'll see people coming in for it more consistently. So, which is good. That's a good practice to have if you're using peer tutoring. Consistency is kind of key with academics. Mm-hmm. So we, it's again, like going into a little bit of the nerdy side, but we have some data from last year that students who attended peer tutoring three or more times for any one class had about half a percentage point higher in their GPA.
Wow.
So if you're using peer tutoring consistently, like it's going to help you.
It's going to pay off. Yeah. Last one. What's the favorite, I guess, among the tutors for writing? Coming with nothing completed at all? Or coming with at least something to show
some
you.
Ideas.
Yeah, some ideas or maybe like a rough draft. What's your favorite? This or that? Empty? Blank?
Blank slate.
Or some things?
I think it's... Oh, that's another hard one. I don't know. I kind of like... Can I say both? I can.
That's cheating.
It's okay because we like you, Lindsay.
Maybe it's... I like a reference point. So, like, a reference point is helpful. I think our tutors and our consultants are trained to kind of work with students whatever they need. So if you're coming in with nothing and you just are there to kind of start from the beginning, that's fine, and they know how to kind of work with all of that. It can be a little bit maybe allow them more creativity with how they work with you. But I think when there's a reference point, it gives the tutor or the writing consultant kind of a tie back to understanding what you need and what that kind of expectation is, what they can do to be most helpful for you.
I just feel like, too, you have like a level of like what the student is capable of at that point and where you're starting from. You have a baseline.
Yeah. I think it's having that, that kind of baseline or that touch point to just know, okay, this is where you're struggling. Or it's even some students will come in and they'll say, I understand this part of the concept, I'm stuck here.
Yeah.
And it gives the tutor can kind of walk it back to there and then kind of use that as a launching point to help you out. So
awesome. Well, thanks, Lindsay.
Of course.
This was so fun and informative,
thank you so
and I've
much.
Learned how to manage my time even better.
I appreciate that. I'm glad it was helpful.
It was.